Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We're back at work. The weekend's over. Our All-Star break is over. Biscuits Colon, a hockey podcast, is back. I'm Dave Lozo of Vice Sports, and I feel like The Athletic is the only other website I'm probably still writing for on a consistent basis. It's getting all narrowed down, so like once Vice catches on to my lack of talent and they drop me, that's when I have to become a casino pit boss, and maybe I'll make my living that way. Dave, I'm in Brooklyn, and you know Sean. Sean's going to say hi now.
Hey guys, it's Sean up here in Ottawa, also of Vice Sports and Sportsnet, and occasionally others.
And yeah, so we both got it down to two places plus some sporadic other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't really thought about the implications of that, but now you've depressed me. 30 seconds into our episode.
Like in the winter, like my seasonal affective stuff is I worry about things that I never would worry about ever. Like it's not really like depression or sadness. Like I get stressed about stuff that isn't a problem. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, everything's going really well at Vice. What if it stops going well? Oh God, what am I going to do then? Am I going to have to go back to college? Can I afford loss? Like it's just my mind races like that. And like that's just what happens on like walks from the train station to the office. And then I sit down here and then this is like therapy for an hour.
Do you need a hug, buddy?
Not until I find out how much I owe the government for taxes this year, and then probably then I'm gonna have to get a hug. Yeah.
Okay.
For now though, no.
Okay, that's good because it took me a while to get down there. So.
So the weekend was pretty good. We got to relax. There was no football either. This was the first Sunday I haven't had to write a football column in like 5 months. That was kind of nice. But there was a lot of hockey. There was the skills. There was the All-Star game, and before we get into the specific stuff we liked and hated, overall, like I thought the skills were as fun as they've ever been. I still think they should bring back the breakaway, you know, put on a funny hat stuff. But overall, I thought it was great. And the All-Star game, you know, they tell you at 3-on-3, nobody can hide. Everyone has to go all out. There's a thing called hiding in plain sight where if all six guys aren't moving, it's kind of like, oh, wow, it was the All-Star game, I think, was as bad as it's been since the 3-on-3 stuff. But I like it's the same thing as usual for me. But like I really like Saturday more than usual, and I hated Sunday more than usual.
I feel like the All-Star game, the way they've got it now, is like as good as they're going to get it, which is still not very good. But
yeah.
The 3-on-3, you're right. I mean, there was definitely it didn't look like 3-on-3 overtime by any stretch. But I mean, the big problem with the All-Star game itself is just the effort level. It's the fact that these players are they don't really want to be there. They've had to cancel a vacation in a lot of cases to be there, and so they treat it like a vacation, and I get it. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a long season, you're beat up, you're hurt. I think it makes sense that they would, you know, nobody's expecting them to go all out on this essentially meaningless game. I know they threw some money in there to try to give them a bit of an incentive, but you know, it's not going to make a big difference. I get it. I think that, you know, the one thing I'll say is 3-on-3 played at half speed without much effort is at least more entertaining than 5-on-5.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
You know, my only thing, And man, and it really came through in a few points during the game. If when I'm commissioner, I'm going in there, get the players together, and you just go like, look, guys, we know you're tired. We know you're beat up. We know you don't want to be here. No one's expecting you to block shots. We're not expecting body checks. You don't even need to back check. Just when you get the puck,
shoot it.
Shoot the puck.
Shoot the damn puck, man. Connor McDavid's on like five breakaways. He passed on four of them. Like, what are you doing, man?
Nobody thinks you're a bad guy because you're going to take a shot. Like, this that is the one thing that's killing it now, is this idea that you got to pass it three times because nobody wants. And then you score and the guy puts his head down like he's embarrassed.
Right.
Like, guys, like,
Mike Green scored a beautiful, like, backdoor, like, pass on a goal. I think it was against Carey Price, and everyone was, whatever.
Yeah, like, and yeah. I get it when it was 5-on-5, because when you're playing 5-on-5, 20-minute period, real hockey, and the score is 19-15, then, yeah, it's embarrassing, right? You're like, I just, you know, you feel bad. You just scored for the 10th time on the same goaltender. You feel bad about that. This is 3-on-3. Like, you know, the scores were what, like 9-5, stuff like that? Like, that's a perfectly appropriate score for a 3-on-3 short game. So, like, guys, you know, you got an open net, let's see some plays, because this thing they're doing now where, I mean, we all know, like, the Pro Bowl sucks, but at least in the Pro Bowl, if somebody catches, you know, if somebody's going into the end zone, they don't lateral it five times at the goal line because they're like, oh, you take it. No, you take. I don't want to be the one who scores a touchdown. Like I promise you guys, nobody, it was like, you know, 44 guys there, 43 trying not to score, and then Steven Stamkos desperately trying to score and not being able to.
Yeah.
But guys, just shoot the puck. That's all I'm asking. I don't want back checking. I don't want any effort at all. I'm just saying puck on stick, empty net, put puck in net instead of circling around in the corner and then throwing it back to the defenseman who doesn't want the puck either. Like, that doesn't seem like it's too much to ask.
Like, there was one goal in the game where it was a 2-on-0. It was Giroux and Brian Boyle on a 2-on-0. And I give Giroux credit because he had the puck and he was on his left wing. And the whole building was like, oh, he's going to tee up Brian Boyle. And he just snapped it short side and, like, had the easiest goal ever, because whoever was in goal, like, totally moved over for Brian Boyle. And he was like, well, I'll just score a goal. It was great. Like, it's sad that he denied a guy who's dealing with cancer a chance to score a goal in an all-star game. But the goal was nice, though. I really appreciated their wrist shot.
Shoot the puck. So it was good. There was that, like, the first game... Like, the first half of the first game where there was, like, only one goal, and you're kind of going, oh, no. Because you remember last year in the final where it was 1-0, and you're just sitting there going, okay. But after that, it opened up. You know, it was pretty good. I watched it with my kids. They're the intended audience for this thing, not me.
Oh, yeah?
And they enjoyed it. They like seeing, you know, like, oh, Jack Eichel and Austin Matthews on the same line. That's, you know, that's cool. And, you know, that... you know, Brock Besser and Johnny Gaudreau playing together. That's neat for them to see that. They enjoyed it. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't...
Were they pumped about Ball with the... Whatever he played? Whatever.
No, he played like one... Didn't he play like one song that wasn't even one of his... I think he played like one country song, and that was...
I saw tweets that he got cut off. I don't know if that was true or not. I think that might have been wishful thinking. But, yeah, it was weird. That's a thing, too, that I think kind of makes the All-Star game not as good as it could be, at least down here. I don't know what it's like up there. But, like, Doc Emmerich's having fun with it. Like, he's a professional. He gets it. And, like, then you have, like, Mike Milbury, who's obviously filling in for Eddie Olczyk and Pierre Maguire, too, to an extent. And Mike Milbury, like, he is the absolute worst person to have for this, because there's no defense. There's no checking. It's all just like skill plays and like great, you know, no look passes. And yeah, like a lot of them get broken up and it's annoying. But when they connect, he's just like, oh man, I don't know if you can do that in the regular season. Like, no, of course not. It's the All-Star game. You miserable human being. You like every sweet goal that was scored, he kind of had like a, like Brad Marchand, like Johnny Gaudreau trips Brad Marchand and it's a penalty. It's obviously a penalty. You can't even do that in an All-Star game. And Brad Marchand, who's clearly having a great time with being the heel in Tampa, you know, he gets up and then like he starts holding his face, pretending he got cut, like LOL, give me 4 minutes. And like Mike Milbury completely deadpans. He's like, I don't think that's gonna be 4 minutes. yeah. Good eye, Mike.
Good,
thanks.
Good call.
It's just you need people in the booth. Like Brian Boucher was pretty good. Like he had a nice little mix of like analysis and like, you know, he'd point out some stuff that was happening down there that was kind of fun. And then every time Mike Milbury talked, he just sucked the air out of everything. And I don't know. I feel like in Canada, it's either, I think it's either one way or the other. It's either it's just full on fun, or it's just like a bunch of Canadian ex-players like taking it way too seriously. I have no idea what the broadcast is like up there. Yeah. But it's not great.
No, here. They treat it a little lighter and a little more fun.
Yeah.
Our main event is we get to watch Ron McLean interview Gary Bettman, which is always...
Oh, yeah? Oh, during the All-Star game?
Incredibly. Yeah, incredibly. They do an annual, like, intermission interview, and it's just incredibly awkward.
Is he lobbing up softballs, or is he giving it to him?
No, he asks real questions, and it's... And you know, McLean's a good interviewer. Sometimes he kind of locks in on something. They did a lot of Calgary Arena talk, and it wasn't too bad this year, but there have been past years where like you could like Bettman gets upset during the interviews. There was one where he kept physically grabbing Ron McLean, like he kept grabbing his arm because he was, I don't remember what they were talking about, but I mean, you know how, you know, you picture Gary Bettman in his press conferences where he's, you know, very short and kind of snide and
not answering anything,
dismissive and doesn't answer questions. And then imagine him doing that with a very experienced interviewer who doesn't just, you know, he can't just flip to the next questioner. He's got to deal with follow-ups and this and that. So that's our main.
Oh, that's good.
That's our main attraction for
that.
I
don't think we get that. I mean, I've been turning off intermissions down here forever, so I never really kind of, like, I know I flipped back one time and they were interviewing, I think, somebody from the U.S. They were interviewing someone from the U.S. women's hockey team. And no lie, like I had it on and she was like talking about the Olympics and they cut to like Canada celebrating like an overtime goal at the Olympics. And I'm like, why, what are you doing this to her for? This isn't nice. Like we're in America. Let's celebrate America hockey, man. But yeah,
that was the thing that happened. And now that I think about it, in the Bettman interview, because McLean at one point was showing, I think he was talking about the replay reviews and goalie interference and they were showing it. And McLean made a reference to what they were showing, and Bettman was upset because he didn't know they were showing it. And he's like, "Well, you could have told me, Ron, that you were showing it." And he said something. He was like, "I was always taught it was polite to look someone in the eye when you're talking to them, so I'm not looking at the monitor as you're." And you know,
what?
It's just like,
oh my god,
you can tell they don't. I was going to say they don't like each other. I think it's more of a one way street. I really don't think Bettman likes. He doesn't like being interviewed by Ron McLean. Put it that way. So that's what we get. Well, I didn't know you mentioned Brian Boucher. I didn't know, is he like a big national guy down there now?
I feel like he's like the number two behind Pierre Maguire, who's out because he has cancer. I forget if it's colon or prostate, because I know that's what Eddie and him are dealing with. But like apparently he's fine. And he's supposed to be back for the Olympics, so everything's good there. But yeah, I think Brian Boucher is he's kind of like the number two guy behind Pierre Maguire between the benches. And
it's all goalies, like he's, man. What is it about goalies?
I think the goalies, I don't know if it's true that, Ray Ferraro wasn't a former goalie and he's pretty great whenever I catch
him.
He's great,
because
sometimes like they use the feed from there for like the second half of like a doubleheader on NBC Sports and he's pretty good. Mm-hmm. What other ex-goalies? I mean, I don't know. There aren't too many like guys where I'm like, this guy's great, but Boucher's pretty good.
Up here it's like Millen, Rudy, Healy for a while, Darren Pang.
Oh yeah, Darren Pang's really good.
Yeah. Matthew Baron, Jamie McLennan. Like, yeah, there's just a ton. I love that. Like, there's no better face of this league, or guy to represent than Brian Boucher. Like, a not very good goaltender who once got 5 shutouts in a row.
Right.
He's, welcome to the NHL. Well, Brian, nobody seems to be scoring, even though the goalies aren't working very hard.
The guy in the Stanley Cup Final who lost his job to Michael Layton in and out for 2 months before they finally lost to the Blackhawks. Yeah, he really is. He's perfect for it. The skills competition, I got to tell you, I thought it was good, but I was a little disheartened to see that Tyler Seguin and Erik Karlsson don't know how to pick up the puck with the blade of their sticks. Like I was kind of sad about that because I can't do
that
it
was,
either. But I'm just,
and I was kind of like, that's cheating, man. Like you can't. I don't know if you guys had it. Maybe it was a shared broadcast, so I don't know. They showed beforehand a kid passing his stick right through the hole. Did you guys get that clip?
What, with like the puck on the blade or just the stick?
Yeah, like he put the puck on the blade and he passed it right through, because I guess they had kids testing this out and some kid came up with that and they were like, okay, we have to make a rule. You can't do that.
Or should have to. That sounds awesome.
That would have been good.
That sounds harder than putting it through.
as soon as Carlson did that, my first thought was, well, that's cheating. And my second thought was, okay, how would I cheat at this? Because now I feel like, like, I think my move would be, I would pick the puck up with my hand, I would put it on the ledge of the hole, and then knock it through with my stick. I think that would count,
I mean,
as passing it through. And then like the other thing you got to do...
That's how we should do it. That's not how, like, the greatest players in the world should do it.
Well, then the other thing that you got to do that nobody did is on the last... the last little barrier, the last hole, you got to pick it up and lacrosse whip it directly into the net from there.
Ooh.
Instead of dropping it down and skating around and they had to shoot into the net. I was waiting for someone to do that, but I put way too much thought. That's like half of my hockey mind is just spent trying to figure out like
how to cheat.
Little, yeah, cheats. Like I'm one of those guys where I'm like, you know, if I was ever in the NHL, like every time there was a line change, I would shoot the puck at the bench immediately and try to get them on too many men, like try to hit the guy going off in the skates.
Huh.
That would be my move.
Classic down goes Brown, looking for the edge.
Yep.
There's a couple other things too that I can't believe if Brock Besser missed one more shot, Brian Boyle would have been the NHL's most accurate shooter. Like he literally had to miss one of his last two attempts that he nailed and he would have had it. I thought that was crazy. And the thing too, I don't know if this was, cause like I had the skills on without sound, so like you know I look down, I look up, and I was watching pretty much everything that happened, but there was no sound for me, which apparently made it much more watchable. Because I was like, I tweeted the skills competition is great, and people were like, I guess your volume's down, and I'm like, actually, yeah, it is, it's great. but Andre Kopitar went, so it was new this year. They got rid of the styrofoam and they got the LED targets, and it seemed like a target would light up and it would stay lit until you hit it, and then you hit it, and then like another one would light up at random. And I swear, I don't know if I was just. I wasn't drunk or anything. Dry January is almost over. I did pretty good except for that one day. But Andre Kopitar went, and it looked like a target would light up, and he would start shooting at it, and then he'd miss, and then another one would light up. And as the other one lit up, he would hit the one that was lit up previously, but it didn't count because it wasn't lit up anymore. And I wasn't sure if that was happening for everybody or if that was just Kopitar.
Yeah, here's what it was. It was a three-second target. So you basically, they would light up, you had 3 seconds to hit it, and then it would switch to another one.
Oh.
And you're right, there were a few guys, Kopitar was one of them, where they got into that rhythm where if they missed the first one, they'd load up the second shot and start their shot, and then it would flip over to something else.
Oh.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was malfunctioning for him and nobody cared because I didn't notice that happening for anybody else. I was like, man, is Corey Perry running the lights for this? Like, is he just trying to screw it? It's like Ricard Raquel like messing around. Yeah, that's what it should be. Like you just keep changing the
lights. Like that. I thought
the
new accuracy shooting was a hit. I thought that was really good. The fastest skater was fine, but
yeah,
why wouldn't you do
really well.
But why wouldn't you do like one-on-one like that?
Because they don't want them to collide at center. Because if they collide, like their legs would fall off. You know, like
I get that you need two guys going the same way, but
I mean, it's like when you run on a track, like you need to have like the guy line up a little bit farther ahead on the outside because he's on the outside. It's just
no, but they did that like in previous years they had like one guy at each side of center at each side of the red line and they just did their lap in the same direction. But they were going the same distance. They weren't at any risk of colliding.
Right.
And then this year they did it one at a time, which just made the whole thing take twice as long. Plus, it took away the kind of drama of watching two guys race each other. So
and it's hard to tell who's going. It's hard to tell. Honestly, like I was watching it again, and you don't really know how fast anyone's going until they cross the line. I remember like watching Jack Eichel's run, and I'm like, God, how slow is he? And then like his time was one of the better ones. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
And there's a couple of guys who were like really effortless, and they were slower. And it's hard to really. It's like the hardest shot. You don't really know how hard the shot is until the thing tells you how hard the shot is. So
and
it kind of takes
like,
away from it.
Yeah, it's hard to, and it is weird too because you're like, they line them up in this exact spot, and it seems very exact, and then they go and they get to the end, and there's just like a net kind of there and some pylons,
right?
And it's like, does he have to go like right by it? Like what's the, I don't know.
So here, all right, how about this? Hear me out. We do your idea, or not your idea, but the thing they used to do where they had the two guys skate at the same time, the same direction. They just started on the opposite ends of center ice. And for hardest shot, since we really never can tell how hard it is, we go Gallagher. We put a watermelon in the net. And this way, like no matter what, if it's 89 miles an hour or 101 miles per hour, we get to see a watermelon explode.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you're right. You have no idea
None.
When you're watching that.
None.
It's like the guy takes a shot. There's a pause. And then everyone's like, oh, okay.
Like somebody went, I'm like, PK Subban might have gone, and I was like, wow, that's got to be like 102. And it was like 84. Like, really? That's it? I don't trust it. I don't trust the gun. It's too fast. Yeah,
did you see the AHL All-Star? They had their skills competition.
A little bit.
And like five guys were over 100 miles an hour on the slap shot.
Really?
And they were like sending out like tweets like, oh, here's, look at, when you've got a slap shot, harder than Alexander Ovechkin. It's like, dude, nobody believes that's, and that's the thing. Like I've seen a lot this week where people are like, we should go back to the old system where teams did their own competitions. And then like the best scores went to the All-Star game. So there wasn't the hardest shot wouldn't necessarily be the hardest shot among All-Stars. It would be the hardest shot in the league. Mm. And it's like, yeah, that'd be cool. Except, yeah, I don't trust these teams not to screw with the radar guns. And suddenly, you know, the Senators are like, yeah, Cody Ceci shoots 110 miles an hour. What do you know? Buy your Cody Ceci All-Star jersey.
And then all those guys get to like wherever they get to San Jose next year and they're all shooting like 75 on the gun. Like, I don't know what happened. Just my shoulder is a little out of socket, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, check out Ottawa Senators games this year. They're really
Somebody sent me a link. This feels like the sort of thing that would have been right in my wheelhouse to know, but I'd never seen this before. But like in 94, I want to say, the Washington Capitals, when they were doing their team skills competition, they had like a celebrity portion where they had like the team shot, and then they also invited like local celebrities. And the place kicker for their NFL team won the hardest shot competition. Like beat the players, like shot 94 miles an hour or something like that.
Who was it? Do you remember the kicker?
I want to say it was Chip Lowmiller.
Chip Lowmiller for sure.
Apparently he just came in and smoked it. And it was like the guy sent me that. It wasn't a clip. It was an article from like one of the papers. And it was like, you know, isn't this weird that this happened? And you could tell like they interviewed some of the players and you could tell the players were kind of like, yeah, great. It was really nice how the place kicker showed up and beat all of us, and you know, they weren't really into the whole story.
That's funny because I was at the gym on Sunday afternoon before the games, and like I don't watch the Pro Bowl, but like they were showing, I guess, the skills for the Pro Bowl the day before. They were just showing it over again before the game. And every year I get roped into this one event, and it's dodgeball. They play dodgeball, and it's amazing because this year it came down to Jarvis Landry of the Dolphins, a wide receiver, super athletic guy, versus Graham Gano, the kicker for the Carolina Panthers. And it was like 2 minutes of like one on two for a while. Then it was 2 minutes of like one on one. And they were like moving closer to the line, moving back, throwing, dodging, moving out of the way. And it ends with Graham Gano whipping it right at Jarvis Landry, who of course catches the ball, and they win the game, and they all explode off the bench. And it's like, wow, this is for dodgeball. Like, meanwhile, like Alex Ovechkin fires one at like 103, and everyone's just kind of like, yes, yeah, that was very nice.
Maybe that's what we need for the skills.
Totally.
Dodge,
I saw it once. Puck. It was when the Ottawa Senators came here for, it was like way back in the day. It was like when Pascal Leclerc was the goalie. And they had this run of like 10 straight wins that I think may have started with them practicing outside at Central Park. And they were probably like in the midst of a losing streak because Pascal Leclerc was the goalie. And to like loosen things up, they played dodgeball on this little rink in Central Park. And it was great. It was like super funny. And like guys were taking it super seriously. And yeah, like why not play dodgeball on ice? No, that's probably a bad idea.
The only problem is you'd have,
yeah,
if John Tortorella was the coach, he would force all his players not to dodge and just block the, like, get out there.
What are you getting out of the way of it for? Come on, get out there, Doobie.
That'd be good. Maybe what they need to do for the skills competition, or maybe the All-Star game itself, you want to get guys to try, scrap the hockey, and just have them play that stupid soccer game in a hallway. An All-Star version of that.
Oh, keepy uppy or whatever it's officially
called. Because I have never seen anybody care more about anything than NHL players care about their dumb soccer game.
Brian Boyle almost killed me doing that during the Stanley Cup final. He was playing with a bunch of Lightning guys, and he whipped the ball like right across like the press box, or like the press box, but like the press area, like next to the rink. I was like, oh my God.
Well, were you there a couple years ago where they knocked over like a wall? There was like one of those temporary walls. Like we're all sitting in the press room, which is just down the hallway, and all of a sudden like crash, and you're like, oh geez. Like I've done a lot of traveling, and I tend to, when I travel, I like to like walk around a city, and I don't really know where I'm going. And I've walked through some bad areas accidentally at bad times. The only time I've ever thought I was about to get killed when I walked in the wrong place was when I walked, I tried to walk through a soccer game that I thought they had just taken a break on, because I'd been standing there for 5 minutes waiting for them to let me through. And finally, like, the ball went off and I tried to dash through, and apparently that wasn't the right time to do it. And no. I was like, I'm going to, like, they're going to find me stuffed under the hood of a Zamboni years from now, my remains.
I've contributed a couple of times where, like, the ball just kind of flies at me while they're doing it. And, you know, you just head it back or you kick it back, and, you know, you win sure. some, you win some street cred a little bit, and you go in the locker room, and you're like, yeah.
Or you just catch the ball and take off with it. And
you take it, and you put it on the ground, you stand on it and go, how many times have I told you boys about playing ball before the game around the media? We're not agile enough to get out of the way. You could kill us with
Seriously.
This ball.
And God. They know that. That is their one chance
yeah.
to kill a media member, is like, if you can, there's no way that hitting a media guy in the face with the ball isn't worth 2 points in that game. Like, you can't.
Just rolling it towards Steve Simmons' feet. Oh, you avoided it. Damn.
And he goes.
Oh, that's so close.
We touched on it a little bit. The two new events, like the relay and then that weird passing thing.
Yeah.
It was all right. I felt bad for, like, Drew Doughty and a few of the guys who kind of got caught.
The puck kind of bounced off that little corner thing a little faster than I think a couple people were prepared for. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't
that part was kind of neat. The one thing I don't get, and they did this in past years where they had the different version of the passing. Like, why do they put the little barrier, so you've got to, like, pass in the air, which I guess, you know, it's supposed to be, but it's just like, I mean, you're making them pass pretty far into a tiny little net. Why not just let them
slide it?
Let them do it. And then I guess the other one was breakaway competition, which got turned into the save competition, which was, I like the idea, but I think when you've got a roster full of all-stars, having a goaltender make 14 straight saves is probably not what you were hoping.
See, I liked it. I thought I just took the same thing and just put a new spin on it where,
yeah,
because, like, it's in theory, it's supposed to be easy to score one-on-one on a breakaway. And the fact that, like, goalies were making the streak go, like, every time it got, like, a higher and higher, and then it was Flurry, I thought that was kind of neat.
I like the concept. I just, like, at a certain point, you're like, all right.
You just want goals.
Can the goalie for the expansion team maybe, like, give up one goal to this roster of superstars? But you know, half of them are coming in and just kind of like either coming in and putting no effort into it, or coming in and putting, like, too much effort in. And, like, you can only, we need a limit of, like, 5 Forsberg moves in these competitions before it's like, all right, you move on to something else.
Maybe it shouldn't go past 10. Like, once you get to your 10th shooter, you know what I mean? Like, if you make, like, you get, like, it's, what is it? So it's 10 versus 1, right? So you get to, well, I guess the rule was, if you make a save on the last guy, you get to keep going, but
you get,
yeah,
keep going,
so. After a while, it does start to get, like, you know, like in theory, the skills competition could still be going on because Henrik Lundqvist is still making saves. Like, that's just, after a while, you're just like, yeah, all right, let's cap it at like 10 maybe, or 15.
He's out there, and I think Drew Doughty is still trying to get the puck through the little hole. And, we'll move on, but it's just two other things I want to mention real quick, just from the going back to the All-Star game. First of all, they actually had an offside review in the All-Star
he
game.
He was offside, though. It was a good review.
Did we ever find out, like, where did that come from? Was that an actual coach's challenge, or did they?
No, I think it was a coach's challenge. I think because it happened right at the bench and right in the blue line when Kucherov was coming off. So it was, like, really easy to see. Like, I don't think there was, like, a video guy in the booth who was like, hey, guys, challenge this. Like, I think they just saw it because it was so obvious.
I mean, it was funny because Wes McCauley got to make the call. Although even that, like, I'm starting to feel like,
oh, don't you dare. Don't you dare turn on Wes McCauley on this podcast.
I'm not. I just feel like it was funny when, like, he was like, that was just what he did.
It's great.
Whereas now it's like you can tell he feels pressure to, like,
exactly.
To keep the shtick going.
He's
going
to keep upping it by, like, 2023. He's going to have to, like, take off his shirt and, like, swing it over his head. And after review, ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-ba-dum, ba-dum, good goal. And then you're just like, yeah. Like, I'd rather go on that end as opposed to, like, all these referees who just mumble through the review. Or,
oh, for sure.
They don't tell you what they're reviewing. Like, there was a situation, this was the Devils-Bruins game, and I'm pretty sure that no one in the arena knew what was going on in Boston because there was like all these Devils penalties, and then somebody scored a goal, and then there was confusion about who was supposed to come out of the penalty box because it was a 5-on-3. Was it a 5-on-3 still? Was it a 5-on-4? But the clock stopped working. And the referees, I'm pretty sure they never made an announcement to the arena as to what they were doing, because I think they were switching out the box that does the time. And you're just sitting there in your seat, and you're just like Ed Hockey League would have been on like chapter two of the explanation by that point, where you're just like, we have to bring the box to a repair shop. And once the repair shop repairs it, we have to pay the bill. And once we pay the bill, we have to then order an Uber because all of our cars are back at the hotel. Therefore, by rule, you get something out of it, and you take that for granted with football. And I'm Wes McCauley.
The NFL explanations are great.
You need them because usually you don't. I mean, some of them are. Yeah, I mean, when the explanations are stupid, you get mad. But at least they're explaining it to you. Is my point. But yeah, that was a good offside review.
All right, so here's my idea. Since you mentioned football, Wes McCauley, I don't know how he's viewed in the NHL. I don't know where he ranks.
I bet they hate him.
But if he does not make the Stanley Cup final, that you've got to bring him in as your officiating replay review expert. Like, you know, in the NFL has, where they used to have like Mike Carey and guys like that. It's Wes McCauley, but he's got to do it in character. Mm-hmm. So you're like, you know, all right, we're going to bring in Wes. Wes, I don't know, some contact with the goaltender, but you know, what do you think this is going to be? And then he's got to do like the Wes McCauley yell.
Like, he's not even wearing a suit. He's wearing his referee outfit and everything, and like
and his
a little
helmet.
Box helmet and everything.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just like, Wes, did you look? Yes. On further review, we have. And then it's like 4 minutes of sigh. And you're like, well, they just announced it, Wes. Like, we already know. No goal. No, they called it a goal, Wes. That was.
But like 3 minutes later, the action's going on, and all of a sudden you just hear somebody scream, no goal. And you're just like, what was that? Oh, that was Wes McCauley from like 20 minutes ago. Oh, okay.
He had to build it up. All right, so I didn't like, and then the other thing that bothered me, and they kind of figured this out at the end, but both times that the Pacific Division played and they won both their games, the other team pulled the goalie with like 3 minutes left. Guys, it's 3-on-3. There's an empty net. You're already up by a few goals. Pass it back to Mike Smith. Let him take a shot. Like when the first game, it was like 7-, you know, they were up like 3 goals, and the other team was clearly pulling the goalie to give Mike Smith a chance to score in an All-Star game. And then even in the second game, it wasn't until the very end that they were like I think Mike Smith came out and was like off the faceoff, was like, guys, pass it back to me. I'm going to take a shot. And then he kind of whiffed on a couple of them. But let's have some situational All-Star awareness here. And circle the puck back and pass it off to the goaltender.
The thing is, when you're playing to win as hard as all those guys are, you lose your focus on silly stuff.
That is true. They were just like, get it in deep, force a face off.
It is probably hard to score though when no one's trying, because you need to get everybody into the zone and trapped, and then you have to flip it over them. And so if guys are just kind of like,
that would be the one, like the one harder guy that would block a shot would be Mike Smith trying to score, and then somebody dives back to knock the puck out of the way.
And everyone just boos. It's Brad Marchand. Brad Marchand knocks it out of the way, and everybody hates Brad Marchand even more.
Yeah, that would work.
So I believe that's the end of our All-Star game summary conversation bit stuff, because I believe we're at the halfway point. It feels like we're at the halfway point. I never know we're at the halfway point. But this is the part where we got to take the break, and then we'll come back, and we got a lot of stuff, man. I don't know if we're going to pack this all into the hour. We got Jágr. We got goalie interference, pissing and moaning. We got all kinds of stuff. So hang out for a second. We'll be right back. And we're back. We've reached a new era in hockey, and I don't know what era you want to discuss first. Is it the end of Jaromír Jágr?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Or is it the new era where Yari Bettman's like, goalie interference, the spirit of the rule? I don't care. What's...
you win some, you lose some. I guess we can do Jágr, because, I mean, there's not that much to really talk about with Jágr. I mean, it's sad. It's kind of a bummer, but I mean, if when you keep coming back year after year, I guess we sort of figured it was going to end like this, one way or another. I assume
it's ending because he wants it to. I'm assuming that there aren't a ton of teams that want him, but again, I go back to this before the season where, I mean, Patrick Marleau is whatever, 6 or 7 years younger. I think 6 years younger than, or maybe it's 7 years younger because I think Jágr turns 46 next month. But last year, Jágr and Marleau had identical seasons. And Jaromir Jágr, points-wise anyway, I think they both had the same amount of points in the same amount of games. And Patrick Marleau got a 3-year deal for like whatever it was, $21 million, $20 million bucks. And Jaromir Jágr's like out on the street, like begging for a job. And I get it. He's older and all that sort of stuff, but there's still life in him. And the thing is when you get hurt at 45, as opposed to when you get hurt at 27, people think it's over. And I just, you know, he's one goal this year, and I know he wasn't really doing much in Calgary, but the idea that like he can't fit on a team, the idea that like there's a team like the Oilers that's desperate for wingers, can't use him. I'm assuming he doesn't want to go there. But I think he wanted,
apparently there was sort of a handshake deal with the Flames that if it didn't work and, you know, by midseason that either side could walk away. Cause he's going back and he's playing in one of the Czech leagues. Cause you're right. I mean, they could put him on waivers, try to send him home, whatever. And if he wanted to, he could wait around. Cause I'm sure some NHL team, even just to sell tickets,
right?
I mean, if you're the Sabres, you know, if bring in Jágr for the last 2 months, give your fans something to watch, you know, something to care about, or you know, have you know, Arizona, who knows? There's got to be somebody who would bring in a future first ballot Hall of Famer. So I'm guessing he didn't want to go out that way. And I've already seen a couple people say like, don't necessarily assume that, you know, he wouldn't maybe try again next year, but you got to figure that.
I think he could. I don't know. It was weird how he just nobody. It was weird that even Florida didn't want him back, like because Dale Talon lost his mind in the offseason. But I don't know.
Well, especially since he's apparently, you know, I mean, from what we're told, like such a workout warrior, like such a fitness freak, like teams.
Yeah.
Seem to love those guys, right? Like you always hear, you know, every team's got like that one gym rat guy, and the GM loves him, right? Because he's like, he's the first guy in and the last guy out.
Great example for the kids, yeah.
Right. You think that, you know, having this guy who's like running the stairs in the arena an hour after the game would be, but maybe not. I don't know. I mean, it's 45, almost 46 years old. That's 5 years past where virtually anybody else
If Gordy could play in his 50s, Jaromir Jágr could play in his 50s. That's what I say. I don't want to rule it out. I mean, I feel like if Jaromir Jágr was done, he'd let you know. But if he has a really good run in the Czech Republic and he comes into camp somewhere before the season starts, and I don't rule it out. I'm not saying, but it's...
Where does he rank if he is done? Because we had him, when we did the book last year, we had him, I want to say 18th.
That was probably too low.
You think it was too low?
Not that I
think. And we had him, and that had him fifth among wingers.
Who do we have him behind?
We had Gordie Howe,
Brett Hull,
Rocket Richard.
Was he behind Hull?
Bobby Hull.
Yeah.
And then he was like one spot behind Ovechkin.
Oh, that was stupid. We had him behind Ovechkin. No, I guess, Ovechkin.
Like multiple MVP. Like I feel like that's about right. I think you could.
Well,
you could nudge him ahead of Ovechkin. Maybe you make the case if on Bobby Hull.
I don't know. I was because like I wrote something yesterday, and I just felt like so when Jágr was a Devil, he was great because while he was there, he had like a 65-point season, and throughout the year, he kept passing guys. You know, he'd pass Yzerman, he'd pass whoever on like the points list or the goals list or whatever, and every game people would ask him, you know, hey, you know, you ever think about how if you didn't go to Russia, you'd probably be already ahead of these guys because you went there for 3 years? And every time he'd always say the same thing, and he was right. He said, well, what if I stayed here and then I suffered a serious injury in one of those 3 years and I couldn't play the last seven? Then no, I wouldn't have passed these guys, so I don't regret going there because that is just part of my journey or whatever, he would say. And he's right. But I can still theorize that because he was a guy that missed. He was a guy. He's one. He's a three lockout guy. He missed half the season in 94, 95.
Two seasons worth of lockouts.
Yes, and so you take the 3 seasons of 82 games that he was playing pretty regularly. Then and you take all those other games he missed. That's like 400 games. And if he just plays half of those, he's the all time leading goal scorer. He's the all time leader in games played in the NHL. And I don't know, 18. Just looking back. I don't know. Maybe we should just do another book and sell it to people and be like, actually, here's the real list. Sorry about the other one.
Update it for 2018, and it's just the exact same book with Ovechkin 3 spots higher. There you go.
Yep.
Thank you. Yep. $9.99, please.
Oh, God. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Him versus Ovechkin will probably turn into one of those, like, longevity versus peak, but I mean, it's not like Jagr's, you know, he's not Dave Andrechuk or Mark Recchi. I mean, he only had the one Hart trophy.
Yeah, he did.
But five scoring titles.
Five scoring titles and one Hart trophy. Like that's super odd. I'm not sure he won them those years. Probably Lemieux, because they probably felt like Lemieux. I don't know who. I didn't look. I looked that up yesterday on Hockey Reference and I was like, wow, I forgot he only had the one Hart trophy.
Yep. But he was a Hart trophy runner up 3 times and third place once, if I'm reading that right.
And he was like 23rd the year he was with the Devils, which was kind of weird. I mean, that's still pretty good. 23rd in Hart voting when you're 42 years old or whatever. Yeah, he was pretty good. He was okay at the hockey stuff.
He was an okay hockey player.
Hopefully he gets a job in player safety and then he can totally tarnish his career.
And speaking of I don't know, I was going for the segue there. I don't think there is. Speaking of player safety, which is related to the league office,
protecting goalies,
goalies, the safety of goaltenders. So Gary Bettman, everyone's mad about goalie interference last week, which is a nice change from being mad about offside reviews, which is what we've been mad about the last 2 weeks. But there were a couple of like really sort of sketchy calls. One involving Austin Matthews, one involving Connor McDavid. So, I mean, there's two of your highest profile players.
Okay. There was one.
Matthews loses his goal and then does the, like, the point celebration that him and Eichel broke out again in the All-Star game. McDavid has his goal taken away, or it would have been his assist, but the goal for his team taken away, scores in the shootout, and then motions go upstairs. Matthews was kind of like done in fun. McDavid clearly wasn't. Like he was angry.
He was,
and
not
it's one of these things.
It.
If when your best young players are just like openly mocking your review rules, you think maybe you might want to take a look at them. And so apparently the NHL did that and did not actually change anything as far as the rules. But when it comes to goalie interference, have basically. I can't remember Bettman's exact words, but they have clarified and reiterated to the referees to smarten up and not be changing. Don't go looking for minor contact to change a call. This is supposed to be to catch obvious and egregious errors. And other than that, let it stand. Is that enough in your view?
So I don't know, the Oilers one happened really late at night, and I was searching for video, and every video I saw was like the regular 3-on-3 normal camera angle. I couldn't tell what McDavid did or didn't do. The Matthews one wasn't really interference. That was kind of a bad call. Yeah. But
the Matthews one was, see, that was one that was, you could make the only way you can make the case that's interference is by a very strict reading of the rule book.
Yeah,
the goalie is in the crease, there was contact. Because the rule book is weird. The rule book says, like, if contact prevents the goalie from playing his position. But what does that mean? Is that any contact? Does it mean, like, if, like, in the Matthews one, the goalie, like, they hit the stick, but the puck was behind him on his glove side. So it's not like.
Exactly. But there was one, too. So. There was one, too, where the problem for me is, like, whenever there's a call now, people bitch. Like, there's no real, like, no, everyone has lost objectivity about when to bitch. And there was a Minnesota Pittsburgh game, and the game was over, and a dude on Minnesota cut through the crease, and his back leg like moved the goalie's stick out of the way, and then the puck went through the goalie's legs. It was so clear. Yes. It was the most clear interference ever, and people were like, "We got to change the rules." Like, buddy,
I had somebody tweet that to me.
That's interference.
Somebody tweeted that to me, and they're like, "Oh, look at this one," And I saw, like, even some of the reporters were like, oh, this is out of control. And I looked at that and I was like,
that's textbook.
Okay, no, that one is, that one,
right.
he knocked the stick out of, that's the old Wendell Clark move that he pulled on Belfour in overtime once in the playoffs, where you reach out and knock the stick and it goes five hole, which you can imagine, Belfour took very well. He was,
hey, he was calm. He was calm.
He was like, things happen, you know, what are you going to do? But yeah, it's, that one was, yeah, that was an obvious one. But, like, I actually feel like when it comes to offside, and we talked about this last week, I think you need to tweak the rule. When it comes to interference, I actually do feel like this is enough. If this message is actually delivered and heard, that, look, we're looking for the obvious one. And you know, Bettman, I don't think he said this in so many words, but he was basically saying, like, if you've looked at it three times and you still haven't seen, and you don't think it's obvious, and you need a fourth and fifth and a tenth, then just have the call stand.
Call on the ice, right. Yeah.
Call on the ice stands. Exactly.
Like, it's like football catches. Like, if you can't, you know, determine the possession on the way out of bounds, it's
and this is the thing. Like, this is the thing that that everybody seems to assume about the NHL rule is we're so used to hearing the NFL, which is, you know, that if there isn't overwhelming evidence, then the call in the field stands. And that's not really what the NHL rulebook says. The NHL rulebook says if there's a review, then we review it and we just try to make whatever call we think is the best one. And
which
and
I think is call, I think that's good too. I think I hate when they stick with the call in the field even though it's bad. I'm all for, like, blank slating it and then looking at it. But yeah, if it's murky.
But when it's a judgment thing like this, like, just...
It's not like feet and bounds. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
I want to see it in action because I feel like this is actually going to, you know, if the proof will be in the pudding, right? If to, you know, tonight we're back, we got, you know, there's 12 or 13 games, so there's going to be a couple of reviews. If we see, you know, refs go over, look at the thing for a minute and then come back and go, no, call on the ice stands, it's a good goal, even though, yeah, maybe there was a bit of a nudge or something, then the system will be working again. And, you know, people will complain for a few weeks because we're used to now, we've had a year and a half of calling goals back on any random contact. But if people get it through their heads that, you know, like the thing, like, everybody remembers the Matt Duchene offside, but there was the goalie interference. Like, I swear there was like a Colton Orr. I feel like the Leafs were playing the Panthers and Colton Orr just ran the goaltender over. And the Leafs shot it in the open net and there was no call. And that was kind of where people started saying, maybe this should be part of the review too. So, like, that's, you know, and yeah, like, that should have been no goal, but just having somebody nudge you is like, let's let the refs make the call on the ice.
Common sense, right?
That's common sense.
Like, there was a play, I'm assuming you saw this because it was a Leafs game. It was Blackhawks Leafs and Freddie Anderson was already down and Artie Anisimov fell on him. And the puck was already by. It was already in the net.
Yes.
And people were mad that they didn't overturn that goal. And I'm like, well, he's not making that save. Like, you know what
I
mean?
And I tweeted that should be a goal. And I had a bunch of Leaf fans mad at me.
Because of the Austin Matthews thing.
And then they were sending me the Austin Matthews. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, that should also have been a goal.
It should
have. Like, these are both goals. And I know, like, you know, the Anderson one, you could freeze frame it and, like, look, he's sitting on top of him. And it's, but you're right. Like, he wasn't. Going to make that save. That didn't, he was already face down on the ice. He wasn't going to suddenly teleport 3 feet over and block that empty net.
Should teleporting be legal? What do you think? Once we get that technology and we have humans that have the X-Men power to teleport, should those goalies be allowed to play hockey?
I feel like you let them teleport, but we have to make the net a half inch bigger to compensate.
Oh, that was your idea that I like for the All-Star game. Make the nets bigger just for the All-Star game.
Just for the All-Star game. Because of that first half when it was like 1-0, I'm like, oh, what do we got to do here?
Seriously. There's nothing wrong with making it like 6.5 by 4.5 for just one stupid 3-on-3 game. That would have been great. We have so many good ideas on this podcast.
What I would have done is I would make the nets bigger for the All-Star game. Don't tell anybody. And then at the end, have Bettman be like, did you guys like that? And people are like, yeah, that was pretty fun. And have him go, did anybody notice anything? No, not really. Yeah, the nets were 2 inches bigger. And you idiots who are always complaining about tradition didn't even notice that we made them bigger.
He pulls like
we're
a Gene
making
Hackman,
them bigger for the rest
he
of
pulls
season.
A Gene Hackman and Hoosiers and pulls them all out on the ice and starts measuring the thing with a tape measure.
Exactly.
How big, Carrie? 7.5.
Oh, the goalies would know. Yeah. The goalies would figure it out immediately. My angles are off. Like my little intricate post tapping routine doesn't work quite as well.
The knob isn't getting to the corner. I know something's off here. I'm filing a grievance. Boy. What else do we got? What else have we got this week? What other topics?
There's a few.
There's so much stuff.
It's a busy week. This one, I mean, we won't talk a bunch about it, but I think it's worth a mention because Thursday is a big day. Have you bought like your card and your gift and everything?
Thursday.
Because
Thursday is the 25th
anniversary of Gary Bettman becoming commissioner of the NHL.
Oh, God.
Quarter of a century of Gary Bettman, which means we can look forward to probably a whole lot of think pieces this week about how Gary Bettman is actually good, and Gary Bettman has done a fantastic job, and revenue is up, and yay, Gary Bettman.
It's always great when no one can compare you to anything else.
He's better than Gil Stein.
Yeah, Gil Stein.
And revenue went up in a 25-year period in which revenue exploded across literally every sport in the entire world.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Imagine like going back 25 years, like is revenue up? Yeah, it's up like, you know, this like 500%. Oh, that's great. So we're doing better than other sports? No, it's up like 1,000% in every other sport.
Right. And our commissioner,
like
our
video games, is now like a sport that's on TV and
esports. You know, esports dudes. Packs in more people to their building than the Florida friggin' Panthers do. Come on!
I was flipping channels the other day and I came across a football game and I was like, "Why is there football on?" And I realized it was two dudes playing Madden on like one of the main sports channels. I was just like, "Oh." I'm like, who watches this? And then I sat down and watched it for like 20 minutes, and I was
ESPN's doing wrestling news now. I think we're gonna look back on like stuff and like 20, like you know how like MTV we joke about how there's no music on MTV.
Yep,
that's gonna be ESPN. There's gonna be no sports on.
The WWE is a billion-dollar company. Boxing, which not one person listening to this could name a boxer other than Floyd Mayweather. Boxing is smashing pay-per-view records. They've never come close to, but yeah, Gary Bettman deserves credit because the NHL has record revenue.
It's only anyways, stopped three times. He's only oversaw three work stoppages.
Yeah, we've only had three years. We've only had more work stoppages than every other pro sports league combined in those 25 years. Anyways, here's when you're done reading all of those think pieces about how wonderful Gary Bettman is. I have a piece coming up on Thursday on Sportsnet.
Oh baby,
savage. In which I present an alternative view to that, and I'll leave it at that. That's what we in the business call a tease.
I'm doing a thing this week for non-hockey. I got to do a Super Bowl preview where I'm going to break down which team you should root for. So I'm going to have pretty much the entire internet yelling at me. Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Okay.
I was just saying this to somebody else. Like, again, I think I might have said this on the podcast last week, but like the Jaguars-Patriots thing I wrote, I got more angry responses and hate for that, just where I was like, root for the Jaguars, screw the Patriots, that I did for anything Kid Rock, which is probably like the most political thing I've ever written. People were just like, politics, what's the deal? Like, if you want to see what it was like, grab the link from the Jaguars Patriots thing on Vice, get like the actual link from the website and search, and go to Facebook and search in the search bar where you would normally search for, like, you know, you would stalk your ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend or whatever. But just put the link in there instead of, like, a person's name. And you could see how many people shared that and basically were, like, not wishing me death, for instance, but, like, wishing bad things for me. It was insane. All because I just said, screw the Patriots.
Somebody just tell me who John Malkovich is cheering for.
Seriously. I'm on board. How unbelievable. I must have watched that 10 times. Oh, it was so great.
And I was trying to picture, like, the NHL version. Where he's like, this is a story.
No, it's like John
as old as time.
You don't even get John.
One team has a 53% chance of winning this series. The other one has only 47%. But anything can happen. One hot goal.
Instead of like a full symphony orchestra, it's like just like Kenny G.
There's a bunch of Canadian dudes just.
It's just some random guy playing the piano in like a hotel bar, and it's just it's John Cryer who costs less, and it sucks. Like that would totally be what it is. Man, we should do that. We should do that for the Stanley Cup Final and just get like a shittier version of the John Malkovich thing.
Somebody call John Hamm and Cuba Gooding Jr. and one of the other three And instead of the orchestra, it'll be Five for Fighting playing that one damn song. We can make this happen.
All right, let's. Real quick, because I think we probably have like 10 minutes left or so. But the Rangers selling all their players would be a really good thing.
Yes.
They should do that because they're done.
As a Rangers beat writer, you're on board.
I mean, they should have done it last year. It's weird that so Larry Brooks in the New York Post wrote that the Rangers are absolutely looking to sell all their guys, which includes Zuccarello, it includes Ryan McDonough, includes the obvious guys like Nash and Grabner, who are just, you know, 1 year left on their deals. But I mean, if you're going to do all that, like, you need to go, you can't kind of do the half in, half out. Like, if you're going to do it, if you're going to trade all four of those guys, you have to trade Henrik Lundqvist. Like, what are you going to do with Henrik Lundqvist if you trade Like, the Rangers are missing a lot of guys, but when they don't have Ryan McDonough, they're a mess. And if you're not going to have Ryan McDonough.
The problem is nobody who needs a goaltender on a long-term deal in the middle of the season whose season isn't already destroyed.
I keep going back to Lundqvist for Rene because they have kind of the same deal, kind of the same cap hit. Lundqvist is a little more, but Lundqvist's deal is a little longer, and Rene's is over at the end of this year, maybe next year. I think there's a 2 year difference, and the whatever the difference is, the Predators window is going to be open beyond the end of Pekka Rene's contract. So you want to keep having an elite goaltender there. You could bring back Rene, I guess, but I don't know. I think I'd rather have Lundqvist in this situation. The same way,
all right.
You know what I mean? Like it's not a huge difference, but I think that trade's never going to happen. But
I just think as someone who and everyone who listens to this podcast is well aware, as someone who has been banging the drum for years about there not being enough trades and all of this stuff, like it's to see a team that's in a playoff spot. Forget about being within 8 points of a wild card, like actually holding down a spot, go into sell mode would be a very interesting development. And I think a lot of teams would be watching that and seeing like, what's the reaction? Do they get ripped for it? Do they get applauded for it? What happens? Because like we see it every year, right? There's teams that are, there's three sellers and 27 buyers because everyone wants to pretend that they're still in the race, and seeing a team go, yeah, you know what? We're not going to win a cup with this roster, so let's reset. I think it takes a lot of guts, but it could be very interesting to see that happen, because then this time next year, there's going to be other teams going, wait a second, why aren't we doing what they did? If we're in the same situation.
You can do it here. People, that building's filled, whether it's that team is bad or not. So
yeah,
you definitely would have a year grace period.
You fill the building, but I mean, are you going to... What's the media's take on it going to be? How's it going to play in the dressing room?
Media here for hockey is so just, it's not like, again, it's an Original Six market. It's New York. But like, you know, if the Mets signed Jay Bruce, like 45 different people have hot takes about it. The Rangers signed Henrik Lundqvist. Like there's one take, like no one, like there's, it's not as fireball and, you know,
right,
anger as it would be in other markets. Like seriously,
other
like,
than Larry Brooks, who is pretty much fireball and anger on everything anyway. So
like in Montreal, like Max Pacioretty gives a post game press conference after like a 2-1 win and people break down his like facial tics. You know what I mean? Like here, here, no one, it's not like that. You can totally get away with it. And it's the right thing to do. I wouldn't trade Ryan McDonough. Like that part of it seems weird to me, unless you know you can't bring him back when his deal's up. But like you don't get
the only
like
thing
Ryan
with
McDonough.
Him is the only thing with him I could see is if you've made up your mind that there's a good chance you have to trade him, you probably want to get in on that now before Erik Karlsson and Ekman Larsson become the trade bait. And now you're everyone's third choice. And every team is telling you like, oh yeah, we definitely want to be in on McDonough. We definitely want to make an offer, but right now we're trying to do the Karlsson thing. So check back with us in 2 weeks and you're left hanging around, like get out in front of it.
That's fair. I hope they do it. By the way, I hope Matt Zuccarello goes somewhere else because like, I feel like people don't appreciate how he is so frigging good. And it's like, it's one of those things where he's just like a little guy and everyone's like, oh, I love the little guy. Like he is seriously... Yeah, he's probably one of the top 10 offensive players. You could, he's not top 10 in points or anything, but just the way he plays and his vision, it's just such a treat. And hopefully, not that the Rangers fans don't appreciate him, they love him, but it's just hope someone else gets to do it and he gets to go play in the playoffs.
I got my fingers crossed that the Rangers sell off and then still make the playoffs.
They could.
I think that'd be fun. They could end up playing a team that they sold to, right? Like you could
in theory
end up going up against one of your former. former stars.
Like if they trade Nash and Grabner and that's it, they can still be a playoff team for sure. They have enough kids in the minors to come up and fill those holes. But like once McDonough
Nash will be the interesting one. Like that's do you know how much do normally teams love the name value, but this is a guy who's also kind of got the reputation of not performing in the playoffs, which isn't fair because he tends to play very well in the playoffs, but the puck doesn't go in.
It's fair.
Or it hasn't.
It's fair.
Yeah, that'll be.
It's fair. It's weird. He's still so fast. He's still strong. But like, I keep coming back to this. I still feel like, and this is such a dumb thing I'll never be able to prove, his stick is too long. He uses like a Zdeno Chara length stick as a forward who's supposed to score goals. And I feel like if he just took a stick and shaved 3 inches off of it, because when you're 18 or 19 or 20, you're super strong and super fast. You're like, you're just an insanely strong, freakishly strong, talented person. And he's still good. But he's in his 30s now. And I just feel like he needs more accuracy when he shoots because he gets a ton of chances and he whips the puck into the goalie's chest. He misses the net a lot. I'm telling you, if he just trims 2.5 inches off that stick, he's not going to score 40 again, but he does everything else so well that I feel like that would just be enough.
You should mention that to him.
Yeah.
Pull him aside.
Players love that.
Yeah, they do. Be like, look, I'm going to help you out here. I feel like I'm not being an impartial media member, but here's
what you do.
Here's what you need to do.
Here's what you do. Here's a saw. Here's the butt end of your stick.
In fact, I took the liberty of of sawing down a few of your sticks.
All right, let's do some questions, and then let's all go home with our lives. Let's do this because we kind of wanted to do this on the main part of the podcast, but we ran out of time. Uncia, who goes by the name Garnet Leopard on Twitter, what is your hypothetical Erik Karlsson trade to Tampa? How do you make that happen?
Can we just point out that is the nightmare scenario for the entire NHL? Because you heard a bunch of that, especially over the weekend. And, you know, him and Hedman were playing their dress-up games and everything. Like, that could happen. If he goes to Tampa and they're running either him and Hedman together or, you know, half an hour of Hedman, half an hour of Karlsson every night. It'd be the Pronger, Niedermeyer approach. Like, we're screwed. They should. I just hope they do that deal now so that the rest of the league can all sell. 29 sellers at the deadline. And
I love it.
Vegas and Tampa.
I'm pro super team. So get him to Tampa, get him to Nashville.
There's your super team right there. Yeah. And for 2 years. I mean, nothing's guaranteed in the NHL, but you got to like your odds of winning one Stanley Cup in the next 2 years if you've got all those guys together. The one name that somebody mentioned that made sense was Brayden Point, because he's, you know, to come back to Ottawa, he's on a cheap deal.
He's under control and all that. Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's a guy, like, I feel like Ottawa would have a very tough time selling this deal if it was pure futures, like just pick some prospects and they don't have anyone to put in the lineup. But, you know, have a cheap guy come back. Yeah, I could see something like that. And then obviously plus on top of that. But, yeah.
They can't trade Sergachev. Sergachev can't be a part of the deal, in my opinion. You have to give up something else. You have to give up something from the forward.
I mean, would he? Because, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know if, I you don't want to trade him, but I don't think you necessarily take him completely off the table. And that would be one that would be easy to sell in Ottawa, because it would infuriate Habs fans. And that's like half of the Senators' identity is making Leaf and Habs fans angry. So, you know, kind of repatriating Montreal's best prospect would be an interesting move.
Orlando Rage. I think that's a sports team somewhere, but I'm going to assume that's this guy's name. Considering the NBA is having major issues with players and referees, how close is the McDavid-Matthews display towards the officials bordering on being unsportsmanlike? Here's my one opinion on it. They should do it after every goal. It's awesome. I love it. But the PHWA Midway Point Awards came out, and I'm pretty sure the voting came in before this, but like Austin Matthews finished second for the Lady Bing. I think once you show up a referee on the ice by pointing into the net as a goal, you are no longer eligible. You just can't do the thing where we all do when we vote, is look for the guy with a lot of points and minimal penalty minutes. Like once you show up a referee on the ice, like you can't win it. You should keep doing it because it's great, but you can't win the Lady Bing anymore.
I do think that was pretty boring. Like the McDavid one was. He got a penalty for it. He got like a gross misconduct penalty, which is meaningless because it was in the shootout. but he did get like the 10 minutes tacked on.
Yeah, so he's out.
Matthews was like, yeah, you're right, it's funny, but it was kind of borderline. And I just got such a kick out of that picture that everyone was sending around, like of the ref pointing, and then like just behind him outside of his field of vision is Matthews pointing. And everybody was like, oh, this is so funny. And I'm like, yeah, it is funny, but like, I feel like that referee, anyone who's ever gone through life like with that vague sense that everyone is like right behind you, making fun of you the whole way, is like, it's like, yeah, that's that ref right there. You're signaling goal and you're like, is somebody standing right behind me making fun of me right now?
Why is the crowd laughing and not cheering?
Why is everybody pointing and laughing? Is the most popular kid right behind me right now just openly mock? Oh, yes, he is. There he is. Great. So, yeah, I put it this way. The Matthews thing is fun, and it was fun they did at the All-Star game, but he plays on a team with Mike Babcock and Lou Lamoriello, so I wouldn't get your hopes up that this is going to become a thing.
Yeah. Well, all right. We got to go. We rambled on too long in the beginning of the podcast.
One last thing real quick, just because people will yell at us.
Do it.
The Tide Pod thing. What was your final? We said we'd circle back on it.
Oh, no. Zach Ronaldo. Like, it took me a while to figure it out.
We did Ronaldo, yeah.
That's definitely my guy.
I got a lot of people sending in ideas, and there were a few good ones. Taylor Hall did come up a lot, and we talked about him sort of after the podcast finished. I feel like you need a mix. It's not just like a guy who's not bright. It has to be somebody who's also a little wacky. So I still think it's a goalie. But, yeah, Ronaldo's not a bad one.
Yeah, I'm still depressed that it took me that long to figure it out. It was bad by me. So thanks again for listening, and thanks for checking in. We're gonna sign off, and you know the drill with the podcast and the stars and the ratings and the iTunes and the whatnot. And we'll probably be back next week. No reason to think we won't be. And we'll talk more about some stuff then. And I'm gonna say goodbye, and I'll leave the floor to Sean to sign off for us this week. Say your piece.
All right. Right on. Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy Gary Bettman Day on Thursday. Remember, you get the day off work. It is an official national holiday.
Yep. In honor of him, you will stop working.
Yes. Stop working. And then when anybody questions you on it, just get like really
blame someone
annoyed
else.
And peevish with them and grab their arm as you lecture them. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Bye-bye.